Is It Funny? Episode 2. The British Invasion. What's the first thing you can remember being funny? It's hard to really recall. I'm sure there are a lot of things you can laugh at as a child that you'll never remember. I have a very strange blankness of my childhood, which I lived in a kind of Zen state, being very in the moment and sort of letting everything just pass over me. It's funny the things that I do remember, finding a nickel in the sand at Burt Lake and being amazed that there was free money that you could just pick up off the ground, which points to, one, my gullibility as a child, but also how important money already was to me, that I realized it was very important to be able to find free money. Of course, some of the earliest things that it's possible to remember are the books that we read as children or were read to us. My mother was not much of a reader. She was more of a doer. But she did read to us as kids. And I in particular remember one book because of a very funny story that she used to tell about it, which is one night when she had friends over. I think they were playing cards or something. And she was reading to put us to sleep, and she was reading the book Go Dog Go, which was very popular with us kids because, I don't know, we like dogs and cars. I mean, a lot of it was about dogs and cars, different kinds of dogs, different sizes of dogs, different kinds of cars. But she read enough to put us to sleep, and then she went back out to her friends, and they were all very upset because they wanted to know how the story ended. So, gripping, funny kids' books, I guess. The other books that I know were very popular with us as really little kids were, of course, Dr. Seuss books. And in particular, I remember Green Eggs and Ham and One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish. Again, fishing was something we did a lot of because we had a cabin up in northern Michigan. So fish, of course, had some weird appeal, I suppose. It's hard to really remember the difference between things that were read to us and then things we actually chose. And one of the first books that I can remember having chosen and having really stuck in my mind was not Alice in Wonderland, but Alice's Adventures Through the Looking Glass. I remember everything about that book. The Tennille illustrations as well as the words, but also the brown cover and the sort of orange writing of the title on the cover. I don't know, orange and brown seems kind of an odd combination, but I remember it very clearly. And that was a book that really sort of settled in me. And I think I read Alice in Wonderland afterward, which I love too. But somehow Through the Looking Glass really had an impact on me and had a lot to do with sort of, I think, formulating this very odd sense of humor. One of the other books that I really remember too, a book series actually, was the Mary Poppins book, which my best friend in first and second grade was just an avid reader of and introduced me to. And so I read the whole series. And the Mary Poppins books, if you've read them, are nothing like the Disney movie. In fact, Mary Poppins is fairly cranky. And there's a lot of very interesting sort of mythology and folklore built into the stories, because that's one of the interests that P.L. Travers had. So I think in some ways that kind of prepared me for what would happen later, which was the kind of, as I'm referring to it, the British invasion of comedy that really changed the way that I looked at comedy and the things that I was interested in. Now, when I mention British invasion, everybody's going to be thinking of the Beatles. And actually, the Beatles will come into it later, but they do have quite a bit to do with comedy. In fact, I would argue a great deal of their popularity was not just the music, but the very specifically Liverpoolian kind of comedy that they presented in interviews and so forth. And I think that had a lot to do with it. Also, the films Hard Day's Night and Help really drew on British comedy traditions in an interesting way. And it's another one of those sort of interesting connections. But of course, the British invasion that I'm really thinking about comes around the same time that I was in sort of the second wave Beatlemania interest in the 70s. What was also happening in the 70s was, of course, the arrival of Monty Python and a lot of other sort of related British comedy. Also the Goons. I'm sorry, I'll read that again. But one of the first places that it came, I think, prior to actually the Pythons arriving, was something that was called the Wide World of Entertainment. And in my memory, this kind of gets mixed up with a show that was called Comedy Tonight, which was more of a kind of sketch and satire show, which was hosted by Robert Klein and had people like Peter Boyle and Madeleine Kahn, which was sort of their liftoff into what eventually things like Young Frankenstein. But that was a summer replacement show, which is a strange thing that used to happen when all the television shows went on hiatus for the summer. They would try out new things and sometimes variety shows. And at least one summer, this Comedy Tonight, which I clearly remember watching on the little black and white television in our camper. We had a camper that went on the back of a pickup truck. And I remember us sitting around that and watching it and really enjoying it because my whole family really enjoyed comedy. But Wide World of Comedy was really interesting because they tried to bring together a lot of different kinds of comedy and literally trying to bring it from around the world. This was, of course, based on Wide World of Sports, which was our Saturday routine. We always watch Wide World of Sports. I have a secret love of sports, which I've only kind of recently got back into because, of course, my partner, Mark, is a huge sports nut. And I've been really enjoying sort of rediscovering the fact that, you know, I grew up playing lots of sports and I grew up watching a lot of sports and outing myself here as a sports fan. Go Gunners. But it's, again, sort of rituals of the family that get repeated. And Wide World of I want to call it Wide World of Comedy, but it's actually Wide World of Entertainment. There were lots of clips of things, including the Pythons. This is what they later sued over, because what happened in the Wide World of Entertainment is that they chopped together clips of things, and they really butchered a lot of Python episodes because it was like, oh, well, we can't say that, we can't say that, and oh, cut this, cut, you know. And again, as many people argued, including in the court case, well, why not just take bits that you didn't have to chop in order to make them presentable for American TV? But that's a whole other strange chapter that I won't get into. Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? I'm just starting this out. I know one of the things that appeared in it were bits from Marty Feldman's comedy series, which was on in Britain. And there were bits of it that were taken out. And I know this because they became family routines. We had our little repetitions of lines. And certainly one of them was the Lightning Tours sketch that Marty Feldman had done, which was his character going on this, you know, sort of bus tour, mystery tour, and they would pull up somewhere and everybody would get off the bus, and like 2 seconds later the you know, tour guide would blow this whistle and everybody had to run back on the bus. And so we used to do that. One of the things my parents believed in was taking us around on trips around our states. We'd visit historic sites and we'd go camping everywhere. And so it was a running joke of, you know, tweet, tweet, everybody back on the bus. And we would have to scurry back to the car. And the other one I'm sure I remember from Marty Feldman was the pet episode, if you know that, where he has this gigantic wicker basket and he's in the waiting room at a veterinary clinic with lots of other people and their obvious pets. This wild beast of some indeterminate nature was trying to, you know, struggle out of the box and attack him, and he would, you know, duck in to try to calm it down and come back, you know, ravaged and attacked by whatever it was in there. One of the mystery pieces from Wide World of Entertainment is a joke, and I want to say it was Australian, the guy who was telling it, but I can't remember. I had no connection to who this person was. I just remember the joke. I was just eternally fascinated with this joke, and actually so was the rest of my family. And it was about an elephant and a kangaroo robbing a jewelry store, and the guy who's telling it is doing all the sound effects of it, including you know, throwing the brick through the window to breaking glass. All he would do all the sound effects as he was telling the story, because of course they went through the whole robbery planning at first, and then went back and did it. And then the guy who's telling the story, who had seen it afterward, you know, the punchline, this fabulous punchline is, you know, when he's asked, could you pick them out of a lineup, you know, an elephant and a kangaroo, he says, well, no, they were wearing masks at the time. And one of the things in the telling of the story, in the retelling of the story, is rolling up the windows in the car, and he would make the sound for rolling up the windows in the car, and the elephant would get his trunk stuck in the window, and so, nuff, nuff, what's that? I got my trunk stuck in the window. And so in the repetition of the joke, we just hear the nuff, nuff, and then rolling it down, rolling it back up. And so we would do, that's another one of these things that we would just do over and over, repetition. We would get in the car and somebody would, you know, go, enough, enough, roll down the window, and then roll it back up again. So one of these sort of comedy routines that stuck with us. And I still, I mean, even in the internet age, I've not been able to track down this joke. So if you know it, I would appreciate hearing about it. But of course, what I'm leading up to is the pythons. And the pythons came at a time in American comedy. Certainly there were a lot of, you know, really great and fascinating people in the 70s, early 70s, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, Lily Tomlin, you know, all the sort of what had been sort of left over from Rowan and Martin, National Lampoon, Firesign Theater, Cheech and Chong. I mean, there's always a huge amount of comedy. And certainly, you know, I was personally very obsessed with George Carlin for quite a long time. But there was something different about Monty Python that really just landed really hard and really sort of captured the imagination in a way that hadn't happened. You know, the greater part of American comedy, especially in the early 70s, was, you know, sitcoms. And there was the Saturday night golden night, which was Mary Tyler Moore, and then the Bob Newhart Show, and then the Carol Burnett Comedy Hour, Variety Hour. And that was sort of it. That was sort of the high point of the week for us watching. And Python was something completely different. And I mean, now people are like going, well, that's really old fashioned, and it's, you know, it's very male comedy and male oriented. But at the time, it was really kind of revolutionary, because all of these things we had learned about comedy, the setup and the ritual and the format, were just completely broken open. And more than that, as somebody who was feeling very much stifled by the hometown life, or stifled by pretty much anything, suddenly they were a window onto a different world, you know, one that we can recognize now as very privileged and male and very, you know, very different in class terms too. But I'd never seen that kind of intellectual ambition. And that was something that really appealed to me. I mean, let's face it, my schools in Michigan were making better auto workers for tomorrow. They weren't really preparing us for something more rigorous than that. There were always going to be a few people who would go on to college. And certainly I was lucky enough that I had some really good teachers in high school, but it was, you know, it was a tiny portion of the whole day. And I was still required, we were required to have one semester of math in high school, but all 4 years of gym. So, you know, got to have strong auto workers. So I recognized this kind of intellectual component to the pythons that I had not really experienced before. And I didn't really know anything about it. I mean, this is where I first heard the name Henri Bergson, as, you know, just kind of a joke within a python skit. So it's a very different thing. And it was something that really spoke to something that was awakening in me, that was wanting, you know, this kind of ambition for more knowledge, for more information than I was getting. And the excitement that went along with it was really connected to, again, here it comes back to the Beatles, this whole obsession, the teenage obsession with music and rock and roll and getting all of the records, because this is a really important part of this first sort of arrival of the pythons, is that, well, there may have been video recording available, but it wasn't available to me. We didn't even have cable TV. I didn't experience cable TV until we were in a hotel, I think on one of our many trips to Arizona, which we went often in the summertime. the hotel had cable TV, and we were like, ooh, what's this? So it was very exciting. But there wasn't, if you watched a show, you had to kind of like memorize it as you were watching it, or get the records, and certainly getting the records. And some of the Monty Python routines I still, that I can call to mind today, they come from the records and not actually from the television show. And, you know, there are often slight differences between them for various reasons. But having those records and having all the records and collecting the records and then trying to find more, because, of course, finding the Python records and finding that comedy section in the record stores across the record stores on the other side of town, which was, you know, Tonier, it's where the Michigan State campus is. The record stores were, you know, run by these old hippies, and they were full of, you know, really interesting stuff. And many of them did have sort of comedy sections, and this is where you would find the Python records. And this is where, you know, the Pythons, of course, led me to the first of the Secret Policeman's Ball, the Amnesty International fundraiser concerts that they had, comedy concert variety shows, whatever you want to call them. A Poke in the Eye with a Sharp Stick, which was the first of what would later become the Policeman's Balls. And that was the one that had Peter Cook on it. And this, well, Peter Cook is a whole other story. But this is sort of that, how that first bit of British comedy landed and how it became so incredibly important to me, and how it was really sort of mixed up with this record collecting and rock and roll and the Beatles and The Who and all these other bands too. And of course, the Pythons, their own history is also tied up with the same people. This is how they raised money for the first film, Holy Grail, and of course, George Harrison creating a film company in order to make Life of Brian. But I think that's enough for this one, because I've gone about this in the opposite way from the first one, which was creating a script and then sticking to it. This, I made notes in the way that I would teach a class, and just ran with that. So I'm going to have to do a transcript after. But if you've come to listen, thank you, and on to the next episode.